Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. One American soldier is dead and another wounded after an attack today in Iraq. It happened when their convoy came under small arms fire and was also hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. The attack comes in a region northwest of Baghdad where several other ambushes have recently taken place. Six U.S. soldiers and an Iraqi translator were killed in attacks in the country over the weekend. The frequent ambushes have now led some U.S. officials to say they are open to the possibility of asking the U.N. to persuade more countries to provide troops and money to secure Iraq. The hunt is on in Britain today to discover just who was responsible for making public the name of a senior government advisor who talked to a BBC journalist about information on intelligence concerning Iraq. Several national newspapers are claiming Defense Secretary Jeffrey Hoon may have agreed to allow press officers to confirm Dr. David Kelly's identity if they ask specifically if Kelly was the mole. Hoon, so far, though, has refused to comment on the incident. Conservative opposition leader Ian Duncan Smith, though, says whoever is responsible for publicly naming Kelly should be outed and removed.
Clearly, if any person, as is named today in the press, turns out to be guilty of doing what they suggested with Dr. Kelly's name, then clearly their positions will be untenable. But we need to get to the facts of that first.
Kelly apparently admitted to his bosses at the Ministry of Defense he had spoken to a reporter who subsequently claimed officials did not believe Iraq could activate weapons of mass destruction in just 45 minutes, as previous intelligence had indicated. Kelly was found dead last Friday, only days after giving evidence to a board of inquiry about the use of intelligence information before the war in Iraq. Meanwhile, a report on intelligence activities before the September 11th attacks here in America outlines lapses and lack of communication, but concludes none of the major intelligence agencies here had information that, quote, would have provided specific advance warning. The study from the Joint Intelligence Committee is scheduled for release this week. The study says an FBI informant had numerous contacts with two of the suspected hijackers and gave their names to his bureau contact, but that lead was never followed up on.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
Lebanon's Hezbollah guerrilla group today claims it fired several anti-aircraft rounds at Israeli jets earlier. A statement from the group says those aircraft violated Lebanese sovereignty. Residents say an Israeli reconnaissance plane circled over parts of the eastern Bekaa Valley while warplanes flew deep into the country, breaching the northern port city, actually, of Tripoli. Israeli planes regularly fly into Lebanese airspace, often drawing fire from the Shiite Muslim militant group. The United Nations issued a warning in February. An increase in Israeli flights over Lebanon could escalate into a more serious conflict.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now, I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
Leaders from several West African nations are meeting to discuss the deepening crisis in Liberia. Latest from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
Gunfire and mortar strikes have killed dozens as rebels besiege residential parts of the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Bodies are reportedly piled in front of the American embassy in protest of U.S. failure to send peacekeepers. Washington says it's ready to put troops on the ground, but only if other nations do so first. The handful of American troops in Liberia already have been evacuating aid workers and journalists. As the West African leaders meet, they're expected to endorse President Charles Taylor's call for a stronger U.S. presence. Alistair Wangton reporting.
And America's top arms control official heads to Asia next week for talks with China, South Korea, and Japan. John Bolton's making the trip to talk specifically about North Korea's nuclear ambitions. even though Pyongyang continues talking tough about its demands for a non-aggression treaty with the U.S., one official in South Korea says he believes the possibility of resolving the standoff is more likely than ever. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. On missions, master spies synchronize their watches. In ballets, talented choreographers synchronize their dancers. And in One Direction, manual transmissions synchronize their gears. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first, until we tested 6 Tornado units, and in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today, or visit TornadoAir.com. Like the Mission Impossible team goes forward by synchronizing their watches, manual transmissions go forward by synchronizing their gears. For smooth transitions as you shift, the rotational speed of one set of forward gears is matched by synchronizer rings to the speed of meshing gears. Reverse gear, however, is not synchronized, so it sometimes grinds in protest. Here's a hint. Don't force it. Just push the clutch in and pause a few seconds, then try it again. Now, you're in sync with both your gears. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program today. Speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting on real radio stations on the ground all across the United States, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite. And also broadcasting live on the internet from radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. This is Tom Hartman. You may have heard the news. It just broke. Oh, by the way, our chat room, tomhartmanshow.com, will get you to the live chat room if you want to interact. I'm actually sitting here looking at it. You can, if you have questions, you can pop them up there, post them there, and comments or whatever. And, of course, if you'd like to call the program, the number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. In our first hour today, we're going to ask the question, was the war in Iraq the kickoff of Bush's 2004 campaign? And if so, is it backfiring on him? It turns out news just from 11:55 a.m., the Washington Post, off their website, two of Hussein's sons may be among the dead in the U.S. raid. I didn't quite catch the newscast at the top of the hour. I'm not sure if they mentioned this. Most likely they did. But nonetheless, it says U.S. troops searching for leaders from the former Iraqi government killed 4 people in a firefight in the northern Iraqi city of Mosul today. And among them may have been the sons of Saddam Hussein. Is that Hussein and Qusay? Or Uday and Qusay. And they've got $15 million bounties on their heads, but apparently it was U.S. soldiers who did the deed. And time will tell if it was them. Although, you know, you never know. What does that mean? You know, is that going to change things? Are these guys who are shooting at our troops and, you know, blowing up landmines and things from day to day, doing it because they have some bizarre and lingering nostalgia for Saddam Hussein or loyalty to him? Or are they doing it because they are simply Iraqi nationalists? And this is the exact same thing they did to the British back in the 1920s. Long before Saddam Hussein was even a gleam in his parents' eye. Who knows? Time will tell. We got an email from Mark Brink. in Birmingham, Alabama. He said, I think that there are three facts that have put together provide a pretty frightening scenario. He said, number one, the detailed maps of Iraqi and Iranian oil fields and pipelines from the Cheney Energy Task Force meetings. Number two, the fact that retired General Wesley Clark on Meet the Press a month or so ago, said that on September 11, 2001, he had been contacted by an administration official saying, we need to help you pin this on Iraq. That's a paraphrase, but I've got the exact quote around here someplace. But Clark was quite outspoken about this, that on 9/11, just a few hours after the crash, somebody in the White House called and said, we've got to nail Hussein for this. And Clark's response was, well, if you have some proof, I'd be glad to see it. And that was the last of that. And number three, all the evidence we have seen, back to Mark's email, number three, all the evidence we've seen so far seems to point to the fact that Dick Cheney was the one pushing for the exaggerations in the State of the Union. And then he goes on to say, you don't have to be too creative to come to the conclusion that the whole Iraq fiasco is the brainchild not of Dick Cheney, but that of big oil companies. This would mean that large corporate oil companies are forming our international policies. What was the definition of fascism? Wasn't it something about the melding together of corporations and states? And, yeah, Mark, but I think that you've got a few of the pieces here. And I've been trying to lay this out for the last week and a half in pieces. I'm going to pull it all together here this morning. Yesterday we were talking about Niccolo Machiavelli and his notions of how to run a government. Last week, on Friday, we talked about the photos from outer space. I want to recap some of that stuff. And I want to bring it together with issues about Rupert Murdoch, about Dick Cheney, about the bond market, euro dollars. All of these things fit together as part of one coherent whole. And that one coherent whole is something that I think our media is afraid, frankly, to go to. They're just afraid to touch it. They don't want to go near it. In our second hour, by the way, we're going to ask about what is the election of 2004 going to look like, and I want to bring up some interesting information about Hillary Clinton. I don't know if you know what she said in England last week about whether or not she'd run in 2004. And in our third hour, we're going to have the publisher and senior editor of BuzzFlash.com on, going over the week's news and talking about alternative media on the Internet. In today's Wall Street Journal, back to the main topic here, was the war in Iraq, the kickoff of the Bush 04 campaign. And just some of this stuff may seem like it's shooting off a little bit, but it's all going to come together. In today's Wall Street Journal, stocks decline, bonds tumble as rates climb. Is the headline, a story by E.S. Browning. Investors fearful that interest rates have hit bottom and are due to keep rising as the economy recovers, sold Treasury bonds sharply. That pushed the yield of the benchmark 10-year note, which rises when the bond prices fall to its highest level since early December and late New York trading. The 10-year Treasury note fell 1 20/32nds, or $16.25 for each $1,000 invested. That is the price that they sell for in the secondary market. Not buying them from the government or selling them, but there's this active market of people who buy and sell bonds that the government's already issued. The yield rose to 4.195% just over 1 month ago. The 10-year yield was only 3.113%. And what this means is that interest rates are coming up. In fact, the Wall Street Journal says home mortgage rates, which often are pegged to the 10-year Treasury yield, already have begun to rise again, making refinancing less attractive. And what they're saying here, and stock and bond investors both worried about the big bond move. High interest rates are bad both for companies and for individuals. They stifle borrowing and consumption and jack up the cost of loans. And that's really what it is, that there has been this concern about the economy since before the election of 2000. You'll recall George Bush in the debates trying to dampen expectations for the economy, saying in the debate with Al Gore, saying that the economy was already starting to go soft. And he was being criticized for that by Democrats by virtue of the fact that you can actually talk an economy down. You can say, well, things are going to look pretty bad, and people stop buying, and boom, things get bad. And there was concern that Bush might actually be damaging the economy by talking like that. The fact of the matter was that when he came into office, the economy was still pretty sound. And it wasn't for a few months that it started sliding. And, of course, the Republicans love to point back at Clinton and blame everything on him. But the bottom line is that right from the very first months of the Bush administration, they knew that they were vulnerable on the economy. They knew that George Bush Sr. had lost to Bill Clinton. And remember when Bill Clinton, on the economy, and remember that when Bill Clinton came into the race, when he first entered the race for the White House, and we're going to talk about this some more in the second hour when we get into the stuff with Hillary, he was, you know, the Democrats were all just kind of running for cover. Nobody seriously thought that George Bush was beatable. He was the war hero. He had just done the 91 Gulf War. His ratings were sky high. You know, he's the guy's unbeatable. He's untouchable. And Bill Clinton came in, this obscure governor from a small state down south, and nobody'd ever heard of him. And ultimately became president of the United States with that banner that they had in their campaign offices, "It's the economy, stupid," and just hammering Bush on the economy. So from the get-go, from very, very early on, this Bush administration was very concerned about the future of the American economy. 15 minutes after the hour, this is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Bush warns Iraq and Syria on support for terror. Also in today's Wall Street Journal, President Bush warned that Iran and Syria are undercutting the tenuous talks by supporting terrorism. Today, Syria and Iran continue to harbor and assist terrorists, Mr. Bush said at his ranch in Texas at the conclusion of a two-day summit with Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, our hero, the guy who bought the media in Italy and became prime minister thereby. Bush says, "This behavior is completely unacceptable and states that support terror will be held accountable. Terrorism is the greatest obstacle to the emergence of a Palestinian state." Now he's trying to tie this all together. "And all leaders who seek this goal have an obligation to back up their words and real actions against terror." Well, Mr. Bush, I would suggest that the greatest obstacle to the emergence of a Palestinian state is the poverty of the Palestinians. And this just, you've got a real economic mess there, something your father can tell you about. And that, you know, this warning, are we trying to blame somebody else? Or are we setting up the October surprise, the attack on Syria or Iran for next year? Or are the Koreans going to set one up for him? But let's get this back to the war in Iraq, the kickoff of the Bush 04 campaign? Because this is sort of the end of the Bush 04 campaign, I think. That if the economy is still tanking, George W. is going to have another war. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But back, let's go all the way back. Okay, we've got Rupert Murdoch. Before the war in Iraq, before the attack, it's almost silly to call it a war. You know, I heard Sean Hannity the other day on Fox. He says, "One of the greatest military victories in American history." It's like, yeah, after 12 years of sanctions, after inspectors, after bombing, after no-fly zone, after it's like beating somebody nearly unconscious and then saying, let's have a fist fight. Anyhow, Rupert Murdoch, who owns 175 newspapers on three continents that reach 40 million people a week, in his own Sunday Daily Telegraph, the media, it said, and I quote, "The media magnate has backed President Bush's stance against Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. We can't back down," Rupert Murdoch said, "where you hand over the whole of the Middle East to Saddam. I think Bush is acting very morally, very correctly. I think he's going to go on with it." So you got Murdoch pushing for this thing. And, of course, you got Murdoch's employees, primarily Hannity, who's, I think, one of the his cheerleading just causes my jaw to drop sometimes. Anyway. "The greatest thing to come out of this for the world economy." Now, here's where we get to it. Here's where we cut to the chase. Go back to the very beginning, 01, first year of the Bush administration, and they're saying, how are we going to get reelected? It's going to have to be the economy. So Murdoch comes along before the Iraqi war and says to George Bush, and this was published in the British newspapers, he says, and this is a quote from Rupert Murdoch, "The greatest thing to come out of this war in Iraq for the world economy would be $20 a barrel oil. That's bigger than any tax cut in any country." In other words, you can have your tax cuts for the rich. That's no big deal. Get oil down to $20 a barrel, and you'll see the economy reignite. Further, he said, once it, Iraq, is behind us, the whole world will benefit from cheaper oil, which will be a bigger stimulus than anything else. This is the setup. And Cheney understood this, and the guys that met with him understood this. So let's now revisit this Cheney meeting, this energy meeting that he had with these oil executives, and see how this is part of the Bush 04 campaign. Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a few moments.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One A Day Men's Health Formula. One A Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One A Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. In our chat room, one of the folks that's kind of, here it is, Bob Finfer, says, y'all heard Nancy Skinner was fired from WLS, right? I mentioned yesterday that Nancy announced yesterday her candidacy, or day before yesterday, announced her candidacy for the United States Senate from Illinois. And I think it's a wonderful thing, and I support Nancy fully, and I encourage you to check out her website, which I believe is Skinner for Senate. NancySkinner.com, no doubt, will have a link to it if I'm wrong. But in any case, she was doing a talk show on Sunday afternoons from, as I recall, noon to 3, with Ski Anderson on WLS in Chicago, and they just bounced her. And it's unfortunate. Nancy did do a talk show here on IE America and participates in the Doug Steffens show in the morning. And I hope we see more of her or hear more of her because she is one of the truly rational, insane voices out there. And I encourage you to know more about her. And those of you who are listening on our stations in Illinois, I encourage you to check out Nancy Skinner. She's good. Anyhow, we're back to this was the war in Iraq the kickoff of the Bush 04 campaign? We've got Rupert Murdoch saying, you know, okay, you guys, you want to get the economy together. Yeah, that's all well and good. And you don't want to make the mistake that your father did. Well, the main thing that you need to do, I mean, it's, you know, what Daddy Bush did, the mistake that Daddy Bush made, was that he simply saved the oil in Kuwait for us, which is no insignificant amount of oil. But the thing that stimulated Saddam to go after Kuwait in the first place in 91 was that Iraq has much more oil than Kuwait, and Kuwait was starting to drill these slant wells at the edge of their border, under the ground, under the border, into the Iraqi oil fields. Made Saddam crazy. He went to April Gillespie, a U.S. representative in that region, said, will you object if I take back this, Kuwait used to be a state of Iraq, he says, and do you object if I take it back? And she said, that's really none of our business, and boom, he invades. And then Bush decides, well, we can't have that. And so they take him back. But while all we did then was simply get back into the pipeline, the oil that was already there from Kuwait, but now Murdoch says, you get the oil in Iraq, and you're going to get oil down to $20 a barrel. You get oil down to $20 a barrel, you are really and truly going to stimulate the economy. Well, Rupert Murdoch, of course, wasn't the first to think of this. He just talked about it last year. Dick Cheney obviously had thought about this back in March of 2001. This is 3 months after these people took office and 6 months before 9/11. Judicial Watch at judicialwatch.org, Larry Klayman's organization, has sued Cheney about their secret energy policy meetings, and they still refuse to say who was at the meetings. We do know that there were some significant energy industry executives, presumably Ken Lay, who had his own private desk at the White House and whose private jet George W. used for much of his campaign. Kenneth Lay, of course, being the largest single contributor to the George W. Bush 2000 campaign. Kenny boy. But anyhow, we don't know who all was there, but we're starting to learn what happened. And Judicial Watch issued a media advisory on July 17th, just a few days ago. And see, this is the one that the media hasn't touched. I was frankly half expecting this thing to be the topic of the Sunday talk shows. You know, meet the press, face the nation, all that stuff. They didn't go near it. And why? Because this could be the smoking gun. This could be so hot that implies that the Bush campaign was planning this attack back 3 months after they took office, and they were doing it for economic reasons, not just to make the oil companies rich, but to provide cheap oil to the United States so that Bush, too, wouldn't have the economic problems of his father. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
India's highest court yesterday upheld the mass firing of 170,000 government workers. But the court also reprimanded the government of the southern state of Tamil Nadu for the firings and suggested that workers should be reinstated on what it called compassionate grounds. While the ruling is a partial victory, it's a blow for India's trade unions, who hope to overturn the Essential Services Maintenance Act, which banned strikes of public employees. The workers struck early this month after the government unilaterally slashed pension benefits.
36 current and former members of the housekeeping staff at the Central Station Casino in Black Hawk, Colorado, will share in a $1.5 million settlement reached in a discrimination lawsuit. 5 years ago, the casino implemented a requirement that all housekeeping staff speak English while at work, even though it knew many of its housekeepers spoke only Spanish. A supervisor was even fired for refusing to enforce the dictate. The workers sued, and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission got involved, which precipitated the settlement.
It's not the sweetest victory, but union sugar workers at the San Francisco Bay Area C&H refinery have a new contract following a two-week strike. Members of Sugar Workers Local 1 voted by a 3-2 margin yesterday to accept the three-year deal, which brings employees of the West Coast's only sugar refinery a 9% pay hike over the life of the contract. On the downside, workers will be asked to fork over an additional $12 every 2 weeks for health coverage.
British workers made more than $40 million worth of calls to phone, sex, and chat lines from the office last year, according to a new study from British Telecom. According to the report, workers at banks and brokerage houses, hotels, and car dealerships were most likely to indulge in phone sex on the job.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Blood-Sucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Hi, I'm Steven Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Steven at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to ieamericaradio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
A stick, a stone, it's the end of the road. It's the rest of a stump, it's a little alone. It's a sliver of glass, it is light, it's the sun. It is night, it is death. It's a trap, it's a gun. The oak when it blooms, a fox in the brush, the knot of the wood, the song of the thrush, the wood.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. So Judicial Watch issued this report. Our question was the war in Iraq, the kickoff of the Bush 04 campaign. And what they find, or they issued, they did this lawsuit. And Brian, our board op in Detroit during the break, he said, "Do you think this is going to come out in November?" And he pointed out Kobe Bryant kind of pushed this off the news screen. Good point, Brian. Asked, "Is this going to come out in November 2004?" Two things to keep in mind here. One is Watergate took two years to unravel. I mean, it took some time. Bill Clinton's fiasco with Monica took a couple of years to unravel. It took some time. So it may be that the media ignoring this thing from Judicial Watch, Judicial Watch, by the way, being the organization that did the initial, I believe it was either the Paula Jones or Jennifer Flowers lawsuit that ultimately led to the impeachment of Bill Clinton, that Judicial Watch has come up with these documents now, and nobody would go near them. Nobody would touch these things over the weekend on the talk shows. Maybe that they're still trying to make sense of them. But here, I have them here. They're on their website, judicialwatch.org. Iraqi oil fields and exploration blocks. They've got Iraq divided into the parts that haven't been explored, divided into 9 blocks all along Saudi Arabia where they can still look for oil. And then all the oil fields that have been found, they have them named. And there's just a zillion of them here. I don't know, probably, I haven't counted them up, but probably at least 30, maybe 40 of them. And then they go through and they list by nation the oil companies and which blocks in Iraq that those oil companies in those nations could be assigned to explore. The title of this document, from Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force of March of 2001, 3 months after they took power, Bush-Cheney took power, and 6 months before 9/11, is titled, Foreign Suitors for Iraqi Oil Field Contracts, as of 5 March 2001. That's the title of the document. And they just go right through the list. China's CNPC might be interested in the Abdiya oil field, the Halfaya oil field, the Luhayas and Saba oil field. They might be interested in exploring in Block 5. They say what's going on with this. They've collected data. They've held discussions. France, Germany, Finland, the Czech Republic, Greece, Hungary, India, Indonesia, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, the Netherlands, the oil companies in every one of these countries are listed, and they have split up Iraq based on who's going to get what. On the 5th of March in 2001. There's also a list of the Saudi sites, Saudi Arabia, and they're going through this, you know, the Harada gas oil separation plant number 2, who runs it, Aramco. Projects open to foreign companies. The South Gwahar Area Development, who's participating, Total, Fina, Elf, ExxonMobil, Shell, BP, Chevron, Texaco, Eni, Phillips, and on it goes. Judicialwatch.org. You can see the whole thing. And what this doesn't come right out and say, but clearly and in my mind strongly implies, is that this would that they were planning the 04 election for George W. in 01, and that they were going to do it based on the economy, and the whole energy policy in the United States was based on get more energy, make it cheap. That will stimulate the economy. And they were right in that regard. If you provide unlimited cheap oil to the United States, you are going to stimulate the economy, and you are going to have a rip-roaring economy. And you probably would win re-election. The only fly in the ointment is they had to figure out a reason why, other than saying, we want to do it because we want to win the 04 election. They had to figure out a reason why they could invade Iraq. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Gizmo in Tucson, Arizona is on the line. Gizmo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, Tom, I don't know if you can hear me. I haven't got much of a signal right now.
It's coming through okay. Just speak loud.
Okay. Let me make a quick point here. Many articles have referred to the fact that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have gone along the same.
Gizmo, I think your signal just gave out. Why don't you get into a little stronger signal area there? And, you know, if you're driving, park the car and give us a call right back, because I'd love to hear what you have to say, but we have lost you. So, anyhow, in the Florida Today, the Florida Today newspaper, FloridaToday.com, there's this article, and it's like, this is, it's amazing where you find these little pieces. This is actually something that was linked off BuzzFlash. And, you know, so somebody found this thing and let the editors of BuzzFlash know about it, and they popped it up there. But it's just this obscure little Florida newspaper. I don't know how little it is, but it's a local newspaper, and it's a story about a local guy. An article by Billy Cox in Florida Today. And on May 25th, while scanning the Air Force Defense Meteorological Satellite Program images pipelined into his desk from 450 miles in orbit, Hank Brandley skidded at a nighttime photo of Iraq. It looked familiar, but not exactly. Brandley retrieved another DMSP image he'd archived from May 3rd, and he compared the two. The most recent photo, reading here from this Florida Today story, the most recent photo showed a blazing corridor of light running the length of Kuwait, south to north, all the way to the Iraqi border. The image wasn't there on May 3. It's going right up to Iraq's oil fields, says the retired Air Force colonel from his home in Palm Bay. Maybe they're all, what they're all doing is building a highway to put in McDonald's and sell hamburgers, but why go that way? I think we're in bed with Kuwait. I think we're pumping oil out of Iraq to pay for this war, end quote. And later on, he talks about how he found this. He says, you look for patterns. Patterns tell you things. He says, and suddenly over just a few weeks, you got this straight line of lights leading all the way to those beautiful wells in southeastern Iraq. If you're building pipelines, you got to have power. You got to have lights, trucks and personnel and food and all sorts of support. If I had to bet, I'd say it looks like we're running Iraqi oil through Kuwait. It would make sense, because Kuwait's got its infrastructure intact. And somebody sent me an email. Let me see if I can quickly grab it. About this very topic. And I thought I had interleaved it here with the other ones. But anyhow, the point that they made in their email was that Kuwait, just very recently, dramatically increased their ability to... I don't have it here. I'll come across it here as the show goes on. Anyhow, Kuwait had recently dramatically increased their ability to refine oil. Now, they're not planning on increasing their ability to produce oil. I mean, they're producing what they're producing, and there's the OPEC standards and all that kind of thing. And you know, Kuwait's got a lot of oil, but, you know, they don't have that much oil. But they just last year started this program to dramatically ramp up the amount of oil that they could produce. And I'll come across it and share it with you when I find it. So, again, the idea that this wasn't something that was just, oh, gee, what a great idea. Let's try this out. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 was the war in Iraq the kickoff of the Bush 04 campaign. Lillian in Anderson, Alabama. Welcome to the program, Lillian.
Hi, how you doing?
I am great. Come on in, sit down, and share your mind with us.
Okay, my mind is just on what you're talking about, this illegal colonization of stealing Iraq's oil, killing innocent children and women. First of all, did you receive my poem? It's still in the making. Did you receive the...
I'm not sure. Did you send an email, you mean?
Yeah. Well, yes, I faxed it in.
Oh, if you faxed it, you would have faxed it to the radio station. I didn't. I'm in Vermont. The network is in Detroit, so I haven't seen it.
Okay, so if I email you,
that would be better. The best thing to do, actually, Lillian, the best thing to do would be to go to our message board, where you can post a message and everybody can read it, and you know, you share it with the rest of the folks, and you'll find a link off that. If you go to TomHartmanShow.com, there's a link there. If you're on the internet, I'm assuming that you might be.
Okay, TomHartman.com. Okay,
yeah, well, TomHartman.com, and just take a link to the show,
okay,
or TomHartmanShow.com.
Okay, the telephone.
Anyhow, your point.
The telephone number of Washington, was Washington Monthly.
Mm-hmm.
You advertised the number. I didn't get the number.
I'm sorry, I don't have it right here. It's embedded
okay.
in a commercial that they play from the studio in Detroit.
Right.
But they will play the commercial again, I'm sure.
You see, my plan is to put. I want to get someone to buy my poem. The first thing, and after that, then it's party time for me. I plan to use my poetry as a stepping. Is to educate, put my little jingles of saying each truth fact on flyers, on a T-shirt, and get people to really understand what's happened, what's been done to us. The setup.
Well, that's a great plan, Lily, and thank you for sharing that with us. I understand. Well, back when I was 16 years old, when I left home, my bedroom wall was papered with rejection slips, 56 rejection slips I had at that point for poetry that I had written. And so I know what it's like to be a frustrated poet. And there are a lot of markets for poetry out there. I encourage you to check out Writer's Market 2004. It's published by Writer's Digest Books. And I think they also publish a Poet's Market. And you can find these in any local bookstore or on Amazon and great places to publish poetry. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona. Gizmo, how's the signal?
Hi there, Tom. You can hear me better now, I hope.
I can.
Okay. Well, first off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over to the side of the road to speak with you.
Well,
but anyway, what I was alluding to earlier is I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq, but only he would have done a better job at building a coalition. And at that time, the threats of weapons of mass destruction would have been fresh in our minds, and Americans would have supported it even more, and maybe the world.
Well, at that time, the threat would have actually been legitimate because we supplied him with most of those chemical weapons or the ability to make them back in the late 80s under the Reagan administration. And so, you know, the stuff hadn't expired. I mean, most of these things, after 5 or 10 years, they're just no good.
Okay, and I understand that. But since Clinton got in, recent articles have came to light that Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld had petitioned Clinton to attack Iraq under these exact same circumstances.
And so Cheney and Pearl, 1998, their letter from the Project for a New American Century.
So the hairs on the back of my neck are raising. They needed to get somebody into office that would go along with their plan. Now, every pundit that I heard of before the 2000 election, when this thing was coming up before the Supreme Court, every pundit that I listened to, every person that sounded like an intelligent individual that was in the know about what the Supreme Court would hear and would not hear, would not take the Gore versus, or Bush versus Gore. They said, you know, there was no way. They would be totally dumbfounded if the Supreme Court heard Bush versus Gore. And what happened? Bush versus Gore was heard. Now, this surprised every pundit that I ever heard on the radio or saw on the television. So I'm wondering, Scalia, isn't it? He's the Chief Justice?
Rehnquist.
Okay, Rehnquist is the Chief Justice. I'm wondering if there was some arm twisting behind the scenes to get him to hear this case. It's going all the way back. There is a pattern here, and if you follow it backwards, something's not right. Something doesn't.
You mean arm twisting, like the same way that Poppy Bush got his son into the Texas National Guard 11 days before he was due to be drafted?
Well, not only that, but Senior Bush put Thomas on the bench, didn't he?
Yeah. Actually, I can't say for sure. I don't remember, frankly.
It was either Thomas or Reagan. Bush or Reagan. But Anyway, the hairs on the back of my neck are raising, and I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get this Bush in, to get Junior in, so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans that they had originally. Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Wolfowitz had designed for their father in his second term. And anyway, that's a point for some contention and some debate. And I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you. And I appreciate your program, Tom. So keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling that 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your comments. I think that there's some possibility. I think that, you know, we don't need to go into the realm of far out conspiracy theory, although it may be true. To put, you know, two and two together here to make this thing work, I think that we can just stay in the realm of people trying to protect their own power on the one hand, while at the same time rationalizing that they're doing the best thing for the nation. And if you come from a worldview that says global warming is irrelevant, burning oil is a good thing, it doesn't matter if there's a little pollution and people die, they're mostly people in poor neighborhoods anyway, what does it matter, we're in our gated community. You know, if you come from that worldview, it's fairly easy to justify this kind of stuff. And then we end up with this war, we end up with this mess. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We're going to wrap this up in just a few minutes.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Let's read this one.
My favorite!
You want me to read her bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, Bartkop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't
he? Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The salesman relaxed with a few pints of beer. He tried not to speak about trade. The poet won't write any verses tonight. He may sing a sweet serenade.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. This isn't Watergate, said U.S. Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, Republican from Alaska. The Madison.com, I think it's the Madison News newspaper, said, no, it's not Watergate. This administration's wrongdoing is of far more consequence than Richard Nixon's misdeeds. Nixon and his aides kept an enemies list and turned the White House into a command center for political dirty tricks. They then attempted to cover up their wrongdoing. Those are serious crimes, but the Madison paper says, but they don't compare with the seriousness of the charges against Bush. He killed Americans and Iraqis, cost tens of billions of dollars, may have locked the United States in a long-term position as the colonial overseer of a distant and troubled land. And then by a 51-45 vote, the Senate just voted not to investigate this thing. Long party lines. Every attempt by Democrats to get answers to questions about the prelude, execution, timeline, and cost of the war was blocked by Republicans who vote to protect their party's president. And let's not forget the oil industry, which Bush and Cheney are members of. While the oil industries are taxed at a rate of 18%, while all industries are taxed at a rate of 18%, the oil industry is taxed at a mere 11%. This reduced rate equates to a $2 billion welfare payment to the oil industry. They also benefit from low state and local sales tax rates on gasoline and indirect subsidy exceeding $4 billion a year. Direct government funding of oil and motor vehicle infrastructure and services tops off at $45 billion a year. And taxpayers, not the oil industry, are left to pay the cleanup bill for oil-related health and environmental damage, which could be as high as $232 billion a year. This from the Albion Monitor News. Monitor.net. California Public Interest Research Group reviewed Secretary of State records for industry contributions to state elected officials, lobbying the governor in key statewide initiatives. From 1991 to 95, oil companies spent $27.5 million and the auto industry $5.4 million in lobbying and campaign donations, and that's just in California. So, you know, we've got this very powerful oil industry, but I'm suggesting it's not just about making the oil industry rich. It's about setting up the economy to set up the election in 2004. Time will tell. Time will tell. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
It's exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Who says Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
Ooh,
you hate me?
Why don't I put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The mystery surrounding the death of British government advisor Dr. David Kelly is now focusing on just how his name became public knowledge. Several British newspapers are accusing Defense Secretary Geoffrey Hoon of allowing the former weapons inspector's identity to be released to journalists. Kelly, who reportedly told a BBC journalist he doubted claims Iraq could launch weapons of mass destruction in 45 minutes, was found dead last Friday. Correspondent Suzanne Chislett has details.
It's now been confirmed that Dr. Kelly was the principal source for the BBC story, which led to two top-level inquiries into the use of intelligence information. The 59-year-old had admitted to bosses at the Ministry of Defence he had spoken to the journalist. It's now being claimed that Defence Secretary Geoff Hoon allowed press officials at the MOD to confirm Dr. Kelly's identity if it was first suggested. The claims will be investigated by the judicial inquiry set up to determine exactly what happened in the run-up to the advisor's death. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Another American soldier has been killed and one wounded in yet another attack in Iraq today. It happened northwest of Baghdad when a rocket-propelled grenade and small arms fire reportedly hit a soldier's convoy. Soldiers were from the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment. Elsewhere, American forces today raided a house in the northern Iraqi town of Mosul. Initial reports indicate several Iraqis were killed and what the military calls, quote, individuals of very high interest to the coalition forces were also either captured or killed. Secretary of State Colin Powell says the Bush administration is keeping a very close eye on the still worsening situation in Liberia and West Africa.
The President and all of us in the administration are monitoring the situation in Liberia very carefully. It's a very serious matter.
Powell says the U.S. has been in constant contact with United Nations officials and other countries in Africa, specifically West Africa. Powell spoke to reporters on Capitol Hill earlier. Liberia has recently seen increased violence between rebels and the government. Mortar fire pounded Monrovia's diplomatic quarter yesterday. Liberian officials estimate the civilian death toll already at least 600.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me, my friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over. Excuse me, miss? There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What? Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
Israel's leading civil rights group has issued a report now criticizing some Israeli soldiers for taking part in human rights abuses. The Association for Civil Rights in Israel says some Israeli soldiers commit, quote, daily human rights abuses against Palestinians with the army's tacit approval. That means those cases are rarely investigated. The report cites what it calls vindictiveness as the motivation for hundreds of incidents where Palestinian civilians were wounded or killed during army attacks directed at militants. The Israeli army denies the accusations, saying in a statement, quote, the opposite is true.
I have a question for the men out there. What do you think your odds are of developing prostate problems? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 300? Actually, my doctor told me they're 1 in 3. But you can help beat those odds with One-A-Day Men's Health Formula. One-A-Day Men's is a complete multivitamin with 21 nutrients plus lycopene, which Harvard studies have linked to prostate health. So now that you know your risk, help beat the odds. Take One-A-Day Men's Health, the multivitamin with more for your health.
Carlton Dotson is being held now in connection with the disappearance and possible murder of his former roommate and former Baylor University basketball teammate, Patrick Dennehy. Dotson made his first court appearance earlier this morning. Chief Walter Coriel of the Chestertown, Maryland Police Department says the next likely step for Dotson is now an extradition hearing.
He did not waive extradition, which means that there must be another hearing within 30 days to make a decision on extradition. He will be held without bail during that period, and he will continue to be held at the Kent County Detention Center.
Coriel described Dotson's attitude as friendly, open, and cooperative. Coriel said Dotson had called police Sunday, complaining he was hearing voices and needed counseling. The police transported Dotson then to a hospital, where he later requested to be interviewed by the FBI. Based on the results of that interview, a warrant for Dotson's arrest was issued from Texas, which Maryland police then served. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Sex and the Single Driver. No, it's not the latest XXX film or a video on golf swings. And you'll never guess its producer-director. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
I'm Bobby Likas on the street, talking to people who love their cars. Excuse me, sir, you're putting a car cover on your vehicle?
You bet. I protect my car outside from the weather with a car cover, and from dings and dust when it's inside the garage.
Is it easy to put on?
Easy to put on and take off.
What's it made of?
Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark. Great protection at a great value.
Take it from people who love their cars. Buy a car cover made from Block It Fabric by Kimberly Clark.
Sex and the Single Driver is a favorite feature of insurance companies. And if you're a middle-aged, married female, you're the star of this show. Yes, statistics show younger drivers are involved in more fatalities than mature adults. And singles have less safe driving records than those in wedding bliss. And here's the clincher, gentlemen. Males are deadlier drivers than females. In fact, a National Safety Council survey found fatal accident rates were 63% higher for men. So ladies, start your engines and enjoy the spotlight. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, broadcasting on the IE America Radio Network, on radio stations across the United States, broadcasting live from the Sirius satellite radio system,
from the depths of outer space,
streaming down all across North America, from the equator to the North Pole, as far as I can tell, and also broadcasting live on the Internet with listeners all over the world. We've had callers from and respondents and folks in our chat room from as far away as Australia. We've had callers from England and Spain and whatnot, on IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org and archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Our chat room you can find as a link off TomHartman.com or TomHartmanShow.com. And there's also a message board there where you can post messages. We've got some interesting conversations going on there, and my email address is linked off that site. So if you want to get in touch with me, although the best way during the show is to drop into the chat room, which I actually read while we're on the air, or at least during the breaks, or to post a message to our message board. I did get an email here. Now, moving along to this next topic, what is the election of 2004 going to look like? What is the election of 2004 going to look? This thing is, You know, it's shaping up as all kinds of weird, and there are a couple of issues that could sneak up. The first one, with regard to the election of 2004, has to do with the possibility of an October surprise. We know, for example, and I get to share this with you. This little bit of music here.
Never say never again.
A few of you may be old enough to remember this song. But this is actually a version that was produced by the Nazis and broadcast into England in the 1940s. See, the thing was, Hitler knew that he had to have war to keep his people behind him, that whenever he slowed down, like the war between the time when he invaded Austria and the time when he invaded Czechoslovakia, the opposition against him within Germany actually started to rise. He needed another war. And so, as the war moved along, they had all kinds of ways to get this out, and the radio, of course, was the big one, Goebbels.
Here is a new version sent to us by a disillusioned Englishman.
Now listen.
We'll never say never again again. Of course, here we are at war again. Up to our necks in war again with you.
Are we going to war in 04?
We'll never say never fight wars again. Of course, here we are at war again. It's just the thing that Churchill made us do.
Oh, somebody else makes us do it every time.
We thought to war we'd say goodbye. Cause war ain't fun and that's no lie. We like to live and we hate to die. But it's all up now and that too is no lie. We'll never say never again again. Cause here we are at war again.
Here we are at war again.
Up to our necks in war.
Are we going to be up to our necks in war again in 04? And this is, I think, this is going to be one of the interesting things is, you know, what, you know, it seems that the Bush administration thought that, you know, back in 01, that Cheney thought that they could pull the economy out of the hat by lowering oil prices, by seizing control of the Iraqi oil fields. But they might have miscalculated. And now they're stuck with this mess in Iraq. And, you know, are they going to pull another war out of the hat? They're yelling about Syria and Iran right now. Is this going to be another war? Who knows? Never say never again. That was a great song, actually. Song from my parents' generation. But so, anyway, that a little bit of music for you, courtesy of Adolf Hitler. And now, back to this thing. What are the election? Another issue that is going to bite whoever is dealing with this thing, and I think it's going to bite them big. I think this is going to be a real significant issue, is jobs. What happened with all the jobs? Where did they go? And I have talked before about Clinton and NAFTA, and I want to get into this with you know, Dean and Kucinich and Hillary and I'd love also to hear your thoughts on this. If you want to call 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. But I got an email from Linda saying, Linda in Cupertino saying, I just heard you say that Clinton and Gore are moderate conservatives. Shame on you. Clinton and Gore are moderate liberals through and through. Using the NAFTA and GATT argument to paint them as conservatives misses the point of the huge global push for NAFTA and GATT years before these guys were elected. True. And whether somebody's liberal or conservative is really a tough call. You know, I mean, what do these words mean? They are increasingly meaningless. I mean, there are some broad definitions, but that's one of the reasons why I say that we're offering you uncommon sense from the radical middle on this program, because, you know, these have become curse words as much as anything else. But let me just share with you about NAFTA and President Clinton. This is from the Wall Street Journal, November 18th, 1993. I'm actually holding in my hands the original newspaper. I clipped this out, and I clipped it out actually because I was giving a speech on attention deficit disorder. I think we've had two presidents now, back to back, who both have ADD, George Bush and Bill Clinton. And And this article was such a great article about Clinton's ADD that I've used it in speeches on the topic. I've written these books on this topic, and I speak at these conferences on it. But it's also, coincidentally, about NAFTA. And so I'd just like to share with you a few little pieces about this, what this was up to. The title is NAFTA Deal Shows Clinton Dives Right In When the Risks Are Great. And keep in mind, this was before the health care reform thing, and this was before there were any scandals at all. This was when he was getting a free pass because they wanted him to get this thing passed. Once he got NAFTA through, then they came down on him like a ton of bricks. But anyhow, when Washington, President Clinton, this is, again, November 18, 1993, President Clinton, during a day sail in Nantucket Sound with members of the Kennedy clan this summer, clambered up the rigging to a point high on the mainmast of one of the yachts, paused only a second, and then leaped into the water. "This is someone who seems to enjoy living close to the edge," says the University of North Carolina's William Luchtenberg, a presidential historian. "Bill Clinton is a riverboat gambler. Never was his gambler's edge more on display than this week as he fought to win ratification of the North American Free Trade Agreement. While others worried that Mr. Clinton was unnecessarily risking his presidency on a politically dubious issue, Mr. Clinton seemed to revel in the crisis. God, I love this," he said amid the White House chaos after yet another phone chat with an undecided member of Congress. When it became clear the NAFTA fight in Congress would be a brutal one, his staff gave him a little black address book filled with the names of about 80 wavering lawmakers, and from dawn to midnight, whenever he had a chance, the president would give one of them a ring. He even seized on names some of his staff had listed as solidly opposed to the treaty and called them too. A few, such as Florida Representative Kerry Mack, switched sides. Politicians and presidential scholars watched the high wire act with jaws agape. Why, some of them asked, did he feel the need for such a perils appalling finish? And why did he insist on making passage of a little understood agreement a test of his ability to govern? And now we get into this ADD stuff. On some issues, when his heart and mind are not fully committed, Mr. Clinton can be listless and unfocused. He has demonstrated he's perfectly willing to waffle and even retreat, as he did on gays in the military and some appointments to important positions early in his administration. But on the big issues, when he feels he alone is the general and the outcome of the battle is in doubt, he puts his reputation on the line. NAFTA is that kind of battle. Healthcare coming up next will be another. It's his style. Unlike most politicians, Mr. Clinton likes having his back to the wall. He works best when time is short and stakes are high, turning up the thermostat for these crucial battles. And it goes on and on, wondering whether Clinton can keep this hairbreadth hairy act going forever. The White House has told Democrats twice in 4 months, first in the summer deficit reduction plan and now on NAFTA, that they have to cast an unpopular vote to save their party's president. That line of argument will work only so often. He's cashing in his chips at a pretty fast pace, says William Crystal, a Republican strategist and former chief of staff to Dan Quayle. What's more, the process of moving from crisis to crisis, blah, 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 blah. And it goes, I don't know how he can do it, Mr. Green says. I don't know about the rest of us. But for better or worse, this seems to be how he's going to function. And it goes on that he's obsessed with NAFTA. He gets into one of these fighting moods. Mr. Clinton can be obsessed. A week ago, he called Washington lobbyist Betsy Wright, once his chief of staff in Arkansas, to talk about a personal matter. But after a couple of minutes, he turned the conversation into a detailed discussion of NAFTA strategy. And she talks about how, you know, once he's into something, he totally focuses on it. And 200 folks dropped by the White House, they say, to visit him, folks from Arkansas. He turned the occasion into a pep rally by giving a pro-NAFTA speech. And a fair number of visitors were directed to Capitol Hill to visit Representative Blanche Lambert of Helena, Arkansas, who was wavering on the vote. For the NAFTA fight, Mr. Clinton turned the Oval Office into a war room and helped develop and carry out both strategy and tactics. He kept his own vote count and made sure his travel schedule included these issues. And it goes on and on and on. So this was a big deal for Bill. And this thing is going to bite whoever wants to run for president next, because what happened was after NAFTA and GATT got passed, all of our manufacturing jobs started going overseas. And these jobs, you know, 2.9 million jobs just during the Bush administration, not to mention the jobs lost during the Clinton administration that were replaced by flipping burger jobs. On and on it goes. 1-800-TALK-YES, the number 1-800-825-5937. And Case in Santa Fe is on the line. Case, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
A few minutes ago, you were talking about the 11% tax on the oil industry.
Right.
Well, you're forgetting one very important thing. In the U.S. tax code, there's a thing called foreign tax credit. Mm-hmm. And the Saudis discovered this several years ago when OPEC was considering raising the price of oil. We discouraged them, but they discovered our foreign tax credit rule, and so they said, oh, we won't raise the price of oil, but we will tax it, because down the line, you oil people can take credit for this tax. So you're really not paying more. You may be paying more initially, but then when you get your refund from the foreign tax credit, we're back to the original price.
Oh, this is an interesting case. And a credit is actually, and a tax credit is actually cash that the government gives the company. It's not like a deduction.
Of course, it's a rebate.
Right. So what you're saying is that the Saudis wanted more money for their oil. So what they did was they increased a tax on it, which then the oil companies in the United States were able to recover from the United States government out of the pocket of you and me.
You got it. You got it. And I have been trying for the past several months to find out through several phone calls whether, when the price per barrel is quoted to us through the press, is that the price before the tax credit or after the tax credit? I would venture to say it is probably before the tax credit, because the oil industry wants you to not know, to remain ignorant.
Well, and not only that, I think that's the worldwide price. But great point, Case, and I'm going to do a little research on this. I thank you for raising that. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer has got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
You love your car. You wash and wax your car. You talk to your car until it has trouble starting. Then you yell at your car, you curse your car, you kick your car in the tires. What you need is Die Hard Express, only at Sears Auto Center. Die Hard Express is more than a battery service. We give your car's electrical system a complete checkup. We look for common problems, and if you need a new battery, we install a Die Hard, America's most preferred battery.
Die Hard Express, Sears, good life, great price. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Sometimes I wonder if our so-called leaders in Washington get up every morning and drink a great big glass of hypocrisy just to get them prepared for their day's work. How else can you explain the fact that while Bush and the congressional leaders of both parties are always speechifying about how much they honor the men and women on the front lines of America's war machine, they cynically shortchange these very troops at budget time? Military spending is now nearly $400 billion a year, yet only a pittance of that goes to outfit the grunts who do the dirty and deadly work of, for example, rooting out terrorist forces. The infantry, on whom the White House must depend to pursue its war adventures, has been left, quote, cash poor and ill-equipped, according to senior Army officers who are disgusted that the politicians and top brass stiff our ground troops. Army investigators report that the underfunding is so bad that GIs in Afghanistan had to buy their own gloves, cushion socks, cargo belts, flashlights, and other basic equipment. Where are the billions for defense going? To huge corporate contractors that make high-tech razzle-dazzle weaponry and that make fat cat campaign contributions to Bush and the other politicians. while the grunts, who don't make campaign contributions, have to buy their own socks in Bush's war against terrorism, the corporate contractors routinely overcharge and defraud us taxpayers for techno-weapons that are absurdly expensive and often don't work or aren't even needed. The New York Times reports that just this year's $690 million cost overrun on the problem-plagued and unnecessary F-22 jet would pay for brand-new boots, fatigues, helmets, weapons, ammo, flak vests, and other necessary needs of 87,000 ground troops. But, said the Army's chief of infantry sarcastically, we've chosen to do other things. This is Jim Hightower saying we shouldn't pay a dime in cost overruns to the military profiteers until our soldiers are fully outfitted.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. The Green Party ponders its 2004 strategy. Green leaders agreed. This from MSNBC. An article by Tom Curry. Green leaders agreed on a call for the House of Representatives to impeach President Bush for, quote, making false statements to Congress, end quote, in order to win support for the invasion of Iraq and for, quote, squandering the resources of the American people to serve the interests of transnational corporations, end quote, and for, quote, war crimes, end quote, including the use of cluster bombs in Iraq. The Greens also called for Bush to begin withdrawing troops from Iraq, Afghanistan, Colombia, and the Philippines by Christmas. Actually, there is another story here in the New York Times. I think this was in yesterday's paper. U.S. is creating an Iraqi militia to relieve GIs. I mean, keep in mind, it costs a lot of money to put an American soldier in Iraq. And there are Iraqis who will work for the equivalent, I mean, you know, a good salary in Iraq is the equivalent of $2 U.S. every day, maybe $5 U.S. a day, $10, $15 U.S. a day, and you've really got somebody working hard for you. And so, you know, we don't need Germany and France. You know, these guys are saying, you know, Wolfowitz is over there doing his tour, right? And it seems to be that this is what he's coming up with. It's like, you know, well, first of all, why not take this to the UN? Well, you don't take it to the UN because then we'd have to share the oil. And the whole program here is to get this $20 a barrel oil that Rupert Murdoch encouraged George Bush to go after in Iraq so that he would have, as Murdoch said, a better stimulus than any tax cut to the economy so that he'd have a good economy and get reelected in 2004. So, anyhow, we've got now the United States is creating a new Iraqi civil defense force within the next 45 days that is intended to free up thousands of American troops, according to the New York Times. The immediate goal is to build a 7,000 is to field about 7,000 American trained militiamen to protect supply convoys. These are the ones that keep getting blown up with these remote control bombs, and replace American troops now guarding power plants and ammunition depots. Other troops who are fairly highly at risk. They're trying to cut down on the casualties, but I think it goes beyond that. I think that they're also trying to set this thing up so that by Christmas time they can start getting these troops home. They can start getting American troops home, which again is going to put something on the face of the election of 2004. You know, who's going to be running? Is Hillary going to be running? I'll deal with that right after the bottom of the hour here. We get some interesting stuff on that. The new Iraqi troops, according to the New York Times, will join American soldiers in joint raids against guerrilla fighters. The Pentagon's urgent priority to quell the mounting attacks. Today, Mr. Wolfowitz said that recruiting Iraqis for security and intelligence tasks was essential for the rebuilding of Iraq to succeed. Duh. The only problem that these guys may face is that if they create, and this is the dance, the balancing act, is that if they create a strong Iraqi military, this is why they're only talking about 7,000 soldiers. If they create a strong Iraqi military, they may be creating another Saddam Hussein. They may have a military coup, and the military takes over and could even kick us out. Well, maybe not, but it'd be tough. But the creating, you know, another military strongman government like in Turkey, well, like Turkey used to be or like Pakistan is right now. I mean, just look at Pakistan. Let's see what happens. Anyhow, the Greens are saying we got to pull our troops out. Okay, what are we, you know, what are we going to replace them? Well, Iraqis. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Ape hunters have unleashed deadly diseases on the rest of the world, according to a new book. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The practice of killing and eating chimpanzees and other African apes has proven deadly not only to the animals, it's killing people too. Dale Peterson is the author of a new book called Eating Apes. He says chimps, gorillas, and humans share susceptibility to a number of viruses. Peterson says the AIDS crisis began when the HIV virus spread from chimps to humans, and he says hunting apes for food is likely to blame.
As we now know, people eating and butchering and handling chimps, that's the source of HIV in humans, HIV-1, which accounts for 99% of all the AIDS cases in the world. So this is a very expensive thing going on, and there are a number of related primate viruses, the SIVs, that could recombine with HIV-1 or HIV-2 and produce yet another AIDS crisis. There are an awful lot of viruses that make a very quick and relatively easy jump from primates into humans.
That includes Ebola, a deadly fever that's spreading among apes in Central Africa. Two-thirds of the gorillas in one wildlife reserve recently died of Ebola, and it easily jumps from animals into people. It kills up to 90% of its human victims. An outbreak last February in the Congo, which killed more than 120 people, was traced to the consumption of infected monkey meat. Peterson says hunting apes is driving them to extinction, but it also poses a major public health crisis.
For me, it's a moral issue. It's an enormous biodiversity issue, and it's certainly an incredible public health issue that nobody has started to examine.
That's Dale Peterson, author of Eating Apes. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The
best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You can't always get what you want. Just my fine. You get what you need.
And will we get what we need in 2004? Will we get regime change? This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day from Herbert Hoover, who you may recall opposed World War II right up until the day Pearl Harbor was born, and argued very, very strongly that Roosevelt's efforts to get us into the war, or suggesting that we should get into the war, were politically motivated. Herbert Hoover said, "Older men declare war, but it's the youth who must fight and die." So the Greens are calling for us to impeach Bush and withdraw our troops. And they're having this big debate. The consensus among Green leaders in Washington this weekend was that the party should field a 2004 presidential candidate. And they're waiting to, Ralph Nader has said, "Hey, I'm available," although he won't join the Green Party, which has always struck me as a little strange. David Cobb, who's been on this program, who's a good friend, a great guy, it may end up being their candidate. He's an attorney and the general counsel to the Green Party. Cynthia McKinney has been solicited and talking about it. So we'll see what happens. Interesting note here from MSNBC, something that I wasn't familiar with in the past, just a number that had, somehow it just never floated past my head. It says the Democrats reason that some of the 22,198 votes Nader won in New Hampshire would have been Al Gore's had Nader not been in the race. Gore lost New Hampshire and its four electoral votes by a mere 7,211 votes, or 1.27%. New Hampshire's electoral votes would have given Gore the White House no matter what the outcome had been in Florida. Now, I didn't realize that. I don't know. Do the Greens really think that 7,000 of the 22,000 people who voted for Nader, that the majority of the 14,000 or whatever it would have been of the Nader voters would not have voted otherwise? Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Some Greens say they never would have voted for Gore. They simply wouldn't have voted, or they wouldn't have participated, or they would have voted in the local elections but not the presidential. Anyhow, the question now for the Green Party is, should they have a focused campaign? That is where they have a Green candidate, and they only focus their efforts in what they call safe states, like the heavily Republican states, where they know that they're not going to harm the Democrat because it's going to go for the Republican anyway, or Maryland activists, Green activists Diane Cameron and Joseph Horgan say, "Were the Green spoiler effect in 2004 real or merely perceived, a Bush re-election combined with a Green spoiler would be the death knell for the party." I mean, if the Greens don't play this right, could it be the end of the Green Party, as these Greens are saying? Medea Benjamin says, "I'm not even sure we should run." She said, "It's a time of great dilemmas when defeating Bush is the top priority. We have to figure out how to grow and build our party and defeat Bush at the same time." Now, on the other hand, there are some Greens who say this is nuts, strategic voting, safe states. We just need to run flat out and get as many votes and as many states and as many representatives and as many local offices, and eventually we will prevail. And I think maybe they're looking back at how the Whigs replaced the Federalists and then the Republicans replaced the Whigs, or the Populists almost replaced the Democrats at one point. But New Mexico Green Carol Miller, who was also seeking a party's presidential nomination, said, "A lot of progressives are focusing too much attention on the presidential election. I'm very worried about the makeup of the Senate. I would not like to see a filibuster-proof Senate. I don't want to see 60 senators of a single party." There was one thing that the Greens were united about. They don't like Howard Dean. Most Greens scoff at the man who has stirred excitement among Democrats, former Vermont Governor Howard Dean. And it isn't only Dean the Greens scorn, according to MSNBC. There's a palpable contempt in Green ranks for Democratic leaders in general. Miller says, I think the Democrats should just drop out of the presidential election. And that line got loud applause from the Green audience. Well, you know, I'm sorry. Howard Dean's in the race to stay. And as I've said before, he was the governor here in Vermont for many years. And I've thought he was an honest guy. I think he's a good guy. But I've also said I will vote for any Democrat who runs. What was that? The Republicans have figured this out, by the way. We don't want to get into all that. Anyhow, what about, don't underestimate Hillary. The right-wing sites, websites, and right-wing talk commentators are just all a froth right now about Hillary. And one of the things that fed the whole thing was that 10 days ago, Hillary was in London, and she was asked, you might remember a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, you know, when she was doing her book tour here, she was on, I think it was either Barbara Walters or Larry King, and one of them, I'm pretty sure it was Barbara Walters, said, are you going to run for president in 2004? And she said, no way. Not going to happen. But 10 days ago, see, that was before this scenario I mentioned, a highly placed Democratic operative told me the other day, there's blood in the water in Washington, D.C. George Bush is wounded. And everybody's behavior is changing as a result of this. And so now, 10 days ago, during an appearance on a London TV show, Hillary, when asked whether she would run in 2004, says, and I quote, you never know what might happen. And there's an interesting story about this in the Christian Science Monitor, Don't Underestimate Hillary. And they talk about the parallels between this and the last election. And we can put some of these questions to Joe Trippi tomorrow at noon. Joe Trippi's going to be on here. He's the head of the Dean campaign. That should be interesting. And if any of you have any connections with any of the leaders of any of the other campaigns, we've had the head of the Kucinich campaign on. I'd love to have some of the other candidates on as well. A lot of them have been very unresponsive. I think they're all just buried and busy. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Margaret in Santa Fe is on the line. Margaret, welcome to the program.
Are you there?
I am here, and you are too.
I wanted to ask about the Electoral College. Right now I used to know what it was, but at this point it seems it's getting so confused. Since Bush got the presidency, even though he lost in Florida, and they had to go to the Supreme Court, how do they set up the Electoral College who has to make a decision? I mean, do they have some sort of a program whereby they make a decision who's in the Electoral College, where they have to go ahead and vote who they want for the presidency?
Well, here's how it works, Margaret. First of all, it's called the Electoral College.
Electoral College.
Thanks. And a lot of people confuse that. You know, it's an easy one to make. And it goes back to 1787. When they were putting together the Constitution, there were these two factions. There were the Federalists, who were largely represented in the constitutional debates, in particular by John Mason and by Alexander Hamilton and John Adams. And then there were the Democratic Republicans, who now we call Democrats, who were largely represented by James Madison and Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson and Madison felt that all of our representatives should be elected by we the people. And Hamilton and Adams were very worried that if all the people got to vote for all the elected officials, that the people, being basically an unruly mob, John Adams called them the rabble, that the people were too stupid to make these kind of decisions, or they would make decisions that would be harmful to the wealthy landowners. And so they did not allow the Senate to be elected by the people. We didn't get direct election of the Senate until 1918, as I recall, and that was a result of the populist movement. So for the first 140 years of America, the senators, United States senators, were appointed by professional politicians in the states. And secondly, they didn't want the president to be elected by the people. They wanted the president to be selected by professional politicians as well. So they created this thing, and we still have this, they created this thing called the Electoral College. And the Electoral College is the way it works is each state, the state legislators or legislatures, actually each state has, they can determine how they, each state can do it however they want. In Florida, it was the Florida Constitution specifies that the legislature does it. But each state can put forward a certain number, and I don't recall the formula for how many electors each state has, but it has to do with population, sort of like representatives of the House of Representatives. Each state has a certain number of electors, and those electors cast their votes for president, and those are the people who determine who is the president of the United States.
Well, in other words, it could be a setup. They could put people in there in all the states who would vote for the president, so how could that be equal?
Well, it could, and that's actually, you know, how it happened in some of the early, in some of the elections, certainly through after the Civil War and during the Gilded Age, and that was a big problem. And so what has come out of this over time has, and in fact, by the way, in the Bush versus Gore lawsuit before the United States Supreme Court, when
right.
Bush sued Gore to stop the vote count in Florida, if you read that decision, you can find it on FindLaw on the internet. What the Supreme Court said was that there is no constitutionally mandated right to vote for President of the United States. The Constitution does not say that you and I have the right to vote for the President of the United States. We have the right to vote for our the House of Representatives, and since 1917 or 1918, we have had the right to vote for the Senate. But we have not ever had the right to vote for the President of the United States. And in Bush v. Gore, the Supreme Court said just 3 years ago, we still don't have the right to vote for the President. So the way it's worked is that the states have given their electors. So the Democratic Party puts forward a slate of electors. The Republicans put forward a slate of electors. The Greens put forth a slate of electors, whatever. And in each state, whoever gets the majority of the vote in that state. So if your state, you know, went for Gore, for example, in 2000,
right.
Then all of the Gore electors were the ones that the state allowed to vote for president at the federal level. Whereas if your state went for Bush, then all of the Bush electors went.
The electors would be what the state had the biggest vote for, whether it was Democrat or Republican.
That's right, and they're usually professional politicians. And for 70 or 80 years, it's been pretty irrelevant. It hasn't been that big a deal because electors haven't defected. That is to say, electors have done what the people, you know, they've reflected the local vote, the popular vote.
But they could defect if they wanted to.
Well, in fact, Florida was going to do it. Florida had said, the Republicans in Florida had said, because they control the House of Representatives in Florida, which is what determines who the electors are, they had said that regardless of the outcome of the vote count in Florida, they were going to nominate only Bush electors and take the presidency, even if the count hadn't come out in favor of Gore. So that's the situation. Margaret,
well,
thanks for the.
I want to tell you that you're giving us better information that we get better in the schools.
Bless you, Margaret. Actually, I learned that in school, so I don't want to put down our schools. There's some good ones out there, but thank you for that kind comment, and thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Jeff in Dallas is on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, how are you, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How are you, Jeff, and how's radio left?
Just fine. I wanted to thank you for posting the information on your show in our forum so people that visit our forum would know about you.
We you're welcome. I am pleased to do it. I didn't do it personally, but I'm glad that it happened.
Oh, well, they claimed to be you when they did it. So,
oh, okay.
So I thought maybe you had done it. But anyway, I wanted to talk about this issue of the presidency because I've been thinking about this for a long time. And we've talked about it before. And it seems to me that when you talk about the Greens or other third-party candidates or whatever, there's a fundamental question that has to be asked before you get to even the rest of it, and that is, what is the goal? My goal is to get George Bush out of the White House.
Right.
And so if the Greens decide to run a candidate for president and actively campaign for that person, then what that really says is that they have a goal that's – they may want to get George Bush out of the White House, but they also have another goal which supersedes getting him out of the White House.
I would broadly agree with you. Although, if you know, this is the debate that's going on within the Green Party, is that
right.
It is possible for them to run a strategic campaign. That's what Michael Moore was begging Ralph Nader to do toward the end of the election there, and he ended up quitting the Nader campaign over, or Nader fired him. I don't know. He tells the story in Stupid White Men. Over this very issue, he was saying, Ralph, you can still have your 5%. You can still get your federal matching money. You can still have made your point if you just go into a half a dozen, you know, critical swing states and tell the Greens in those states, thanks for all your help. Thanks for your support. Be with us next time around, but this time vote for Gore.
Right.
And Ralph wouldn't do it. It's called strategic, you know.
See, and the problem that I have is I will tell you that I've been heavily, I'm a Democrat. I'm a Democratic precinct chair. I've been heavily involved with the Green Party here in Dallas, Texas. And what I see is that the Green Party has been very successful on local levels throughout the United States in electing people, actually electing people, like the mayor of Santa Monica, California, for example.
Right.
And so my opinion is that if the Green Party wants to build, what they really should be doing is they should be focusing on local elections where they can win.
Yeah.
And if they have to hold their nose, they should, but they should support the Democratic nominee to get rid of George Bush.
I agree. They should follow the strategy that the populists did in the 1890s, which was exactly that.
Right. And, of course, the problem with the strategic campaign is that if you're out there strategically running an election where you're saying, well, vote for the Green candidate in let's say Texas, for example. The message is the Democrats and the Republicans are both slobs and don't deserve your vote, so vote for the Green candidate. Well, the problem with that is that I can assure you that the corporate media is going to make damn sure that every single person in the United States knows that Green candidate is running, and that the reason the Green candidate is running is because the Democrats and the Republicans are both slobs. And the reason they're going to do that is because they're going to want to hold the vote down and influence the vote in competitive states.
Got it, Jeff. I'm sorry we're up against a break here, but yeah, good point, and I appreciate your making it. John in Long Beach, hang on over the break, and I'll take your call right after we get back. Oh, you're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glasters, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
Yes, yes. Thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fantila mm-hmm. is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the democracy zone. What is the election of 2004 going to look like? We have John in Long Beach on the line. John, what do you think?
Morning, Tom.
Hey, John.
If I had my druthers, which I don't, but if I did, I probably would like to see a Bernie Sanders and Kucinich ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie's
a good guy, I can tell you, and so is Dennis.
Yeah, and Bernie seems to really have the people's welfare at heart.
Yeah, did you hear that clip I played of him a couple days ago?
I don't know, but I did see the clip where he was interviewing Greenspan.
Yeah, I played the audio from that. He really gave him hell.
That's good. And I don't know of anybody else that's done that.
Yeah.
But
yep.
Having said that, first of all, back up a bit, when you're talking about the 2000 election in Florida, it's true that even if the Supreme Court have not stuck their nose into it, the Florida, what do they call it, the ones in charge of the, of it going to the, not the House of Representatives, the Electoral College.
The Electoral
They would have given it to Bush anyway.
Well, that was what the Republicans in the House of Representatives were talking about. They can dictate who the electors are that are sent to Washington, D.C.
So, you know, so much for your vote. The one thing I would like to bring up is, I hope we don't lose sight of this. Two things. If Bush's popularity really dips down low, we could have another September surprise.
Yeah, that's what I'm predicting, that there will be an October surprise.
Well, September,
it'll either be a disaster or it'll be a war.
Then they could suspend voting.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is this.
Well, I'm not suggesting that they're going to do something that'll suspend voting. I think that's something that I think would not stand in the United States of America. But I think that they will do something like the Ayatollah taking the hostages that caused a very popular President Carter to lose to Reagan. Or the Bay of Pigs kind of thing.
Something of that nature.
Yeah, John, we're out of time here. Thanks for your call, and thanks for sharing that. If there's more that you wanted to get into on that, give us a call back in the next hour. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, The Democracy Zone, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle on the IE America Radio Network.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. One American soldier is dead and another wounded after an attack today in Iraq that happened when their convoy came under small arms fire and was also hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. The attack comes in a region northwest of Baghdad where several other ambushes have recently taken place. Six U.S. soldiers and an Iraqi translator were killed in attacks in the country over the weekend. The frequent ambushes have now led some U.S. officials to say they are open to the possibility of asking the U.N. to persuade more countries to provide troops and money to secure Iraq. The hunt is on in Britain today to discover just who was responsible for making public the name of a senior government advisor who talked to a BBC journalist about information on intelligence concerning Iraq. Several national newspapers are claiming Defense Secretary Geoffrey Hoon may have agreed to allow press officers to confirm Dr. David Kelly's identity if they ask specifically if Kelly was the mole. Hoon, so far, though, has refused to comment on the incident. Conservative opposition leader Ian Duncan Smith, though, says whoever is responsible for publicly naming Kelly should be outed and removed.
Clearly, if any person, as is named today in the press, turns out to be guilty of doing what they suggested with Dr. Kelly's name, then clearly their positions will be untenable. But we need to get to the facts of that first.
Kelly apparently admitted to his bosses at the Ministry of Defense he had spoken to a reporter who subsequently claimed officials did not believe Iraq could activate weapons of mass destruction in just 45 minutes, as previous intelligence had indicated. Kelly was found dead last Friday, only days after giving evidence to a board of inquiry about the use of intelligence information before the war in Iraq. Meanwhile, a report on intelligence activities before the September 11th attacks here in America outlines lapses and lack of communication, but concludes none of the major intelligence agencies here had information that, quote, would have provided specific advance warning. The study from the Joint Intelligence Committee is scheduled for release this week. The study says an FBI informant had numerous contacts with two of the suspected hijackers and gave their names to his bureau contact, but that lead was never followed up on.
Hey, watch it!
Down in front! Hey, we made it!
Yeah.
4 hours back-to-back Godzilla movies!
Wait!
Sorry. Did you see that cute girl on the end as we came in?
Oh, who could miss her?
So ask her out.
What?
No. Excuse me. My friend here wants to know if the girl on the aisle will go out with her. Pass it down.
Ask the girl over there if she wants to meet this loner. Pass it down.
Hey, that dude over there wants to meet the girl next to you when the flick's over.
Excuse me, miss. There's a guy down there who wants to know if you're an organ and tissue donor.
Oh, yes, of course.
Are you an organ and tissue donor? It's a simple but important question. Talk to your family today. Make sure they know your decision so there'll be no question later.
Hey, buddy. She said yeah. Oh, hey, buddy. Me too.
What?
Share your life. Share your decision. Call 1-800-355-SHARE for a free brochure. 1-800-355-SHARE. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coalition on Donation.
Lebanon's Hezbollah guerrilla group today claims it fired several anti-aircraft rounds at Israeli jets earlier. A statement from the group says those aircraft violated Lebanese sovereignty. Residents say an Israeli reconnaissance plane circled over parts of the eastern Bekaa Valley while warplanes flew deep into the country, breaching the northern port city, actually, of Tripoli. Israeli planes regularly fly into Lebanese airspace, often drawing fire from the Shiite Muslim militant group. The United Nations issued a warning in February. An increase in Israeli flights over Lebanon could escalate into a more serious conflict.
Mom, see you later.
Jason? Who else is going to the concert with you?
Anna and Kyle.
So you'll be home?
At 11.
Good. Make sure to call me if anything comes up, okay?
You know I never forget.
I know you don't. Now, about that music.
Yeah, isn't it awesome?
Well,
let your kids be who they are, but know what they're doing. Talk, know, ask. Parents, the anti-drug. For more information, call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Leaders from several West African nations are meeting to discuss the deepening crisis in Liberia. Latest from correspondent Alistair Wanklin.
Gunfire and mortar strikes have killed dozens as rebels besiege residential parts of the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Bodies are reportedly piled in front of the American embassy in protest of U.S. failure to send peacekeepers. Washington says it's ready to put troops on the ground, but only if other nations do so first. The handful of American troops in Liberia already have been evacuating aid workers and journalists. As the West African leaders meet, they're expected to endorse President Charles Taylor's call for a stronger U.S. presence. Alistair Wanklin reporting.
And America's top arms control official heads to Asia next week for talks with China, South Korea, and Japan. John Bolton's making the trip to talk specifically about North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Even though Pyongyang continues talking tough about its demands for a non-aggression treaty with the U.S., one official in South Korea says he believes the possibility of resolving the standoff is more likely than ever. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Years ago, a small hard drive meant a traffic-y physical commute. Today, it's the curse of telecommuting. But however you get to work, I'll pave the way with some timely maintenance tips when we come back.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. 10 years ago, I discovered the company with the best fuel injector cleaner, BG Products. Now wait, there's more. To do the job right requires cleaning both the fuel and the air induction systems. The process is called BG Complete Induction System Service. If you want your vehicle to run like new, don't settle for anything less. To find a shop near you to perform this service, go to bgfindtheshop.com. That's bgfindtheshop.com.
Whether you commute to work via old-fashioned blacktop or the Internet's superhighway, automotive maintenance will give you more time for fun. Just remember, give me five. One, once a year, treat your vehicle to an annual inspection. Two, every 2 years, change brake fluid. Three, it's time for an oil service every 3,000 miles. Four, mark your calendar every 4 years for new radiator hoses. And five, rotate tires every 5,000 miles. Now, take five away from your busy job to enjoy a cruise in your well-maintained vehicle. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, broadcasting on from the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system, covering North and Central America from Alaska to the equator, and streaming audio on the Internet at radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org, and with a live chat room off TomHartmanShow.com. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. to the third hour of our program. Ben in Elgin, Illinois, has been patiently waiting through two breaks as we were taking calls from John in Long Beach, and on, you know, on it went. Ben, come on in and just wrap this up, and then we're gonna get to Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. But Ben, I wanted to take your call there.
Okay, thank you. You know, it occurs to me that in other countries where I understand they have parliamentary systems of government that encourage this sort of thing, it is often possible for a minor party and a secondary party to form a coalition and thereby take power away from the objectionable third party that can't quite make it against both of them.
It's not just possible. It's necessary, and it's routinely done.
Yes. Why can't we do this here? I think that the Greens are missing a golden opportunity, as are the Democrats. If, for example, they could partition things up, like, say, we have an open seat in a place where, you know, Greens are fairly strong. We're just gonna put up a joint candidate. You Greens select the candidate, and that's who's going up for this seat. That sort of thing, where there's some power sharing,
yeah.
And then
or at
we
least
could...
some cooperation.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. I agree with you absolutely,
interest.
Ben. I absolutely agree with you, and I thank you for calling and bringing that up. I appreciate the call. I wrote a piece about this some time ago called How to Take Back America that pointed out that we do not have proportional representation here in the United States, and we do not have instant runoff voting. So we're stuck with a two-party system because proportional representation wasn't even invented until 1841 when John Stuart Mill wrote about it. And so, you know, we really, the Republicans have figured this out. Anyhow. I am so pleased today and so honored to have Mark Carlin on as our guest for the third hour of the program. Mark is the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am. There seems to have been some cutoff there for a moment.
Ah, okay. I think our computer burped or something. I'm not sure. Welcome back.
Yes. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Oh, I'm so pleased to have you on. And we've been had a lively conversation in the last hour about Greens and Democrats. It just kind of spilled over into this hour. So
mm-hmm.
Thank you for being patient while
sure.
While we took Ben's call. He makes a good and important point, and I'm glad that we hung on for that. Oh, our line renegotiated. Interesting. Okay. Anyhow, tell me about tell our listeners about BuzzFlash.com. How'd you get started with this thing?
We started May of 2000, Tom, when we only had 34 users a month. We're up to 2 to 2.4 million user sessions a month. And
wow.
Our purpose was to provide a pro-democracy news site. This was, of course, before Bush was elected. Some of people think of us as an anti-Bush site, but that's not accurate. If Gore had been put in the White House as he was duly elected, we're certain that we would have been critical to a certain degree of his administration. We are independent, and we consider ourselves, as I said, a pro-democracy news site. Our slogan is a Superman slogan. We stand for truth, justice, and the American way.
That's a good one.
We're quite active in terms of news and commentary. Originally, we were reacting to Matt Drudge and felt that there had to be an alternative to the Drudge Report. We called ourselves, as a matter of fact, the UnDrudge Report. And we provide a lot more news and commentary than he does, and certainly a lot more headline links. We provide editorials. We have a lot of reader contributions. We have a very popular item called the Mailbag, where readers write in their thoughts and opinions and even news items and connections to news stories. We have several popular regular columnists on the site, and we're becoming increasingly influential, I think, in terms of helping to define media coverage. And our goals have been achieved, and we're just hoping to extend them to a larger readership even than we have now, and also to be able to help to further define the debate in terms of improving our democracy and preventing it from being dismantled.
Good one. Good one. If you who are listening have questions for Mark, would like to say, hey, you know, good on you, keep it up or whatever. Our number is 1-800-TALK. Yes, 1-800-825-5937. Our guest this hour, Mark Carlin, the editor and publisher of BuzzFlash.com. Mark, what do you see shaping up for the 2004 election? What are the trends that you're seeing?
We have said repeatedly, Tom, if the Democrats have the courage and the will to define the issues that are of concern to the American public, they will win. If they, as many of the candidates who are running for the Democratic primary nomination, have evidenced, if they simply let the Republicans define the issues and react to them, then Bush will win. Bush's administration is really, aside from all the ancillary issues and criticism, is based on the administration's ability to define the goals and future of America according to the Bush administration. And the Democrats have been particularly reactive, not proactive. If the Democrats become proactive, I think they could easily win.
Yeah, then they could have a very strong future. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut's on the line with Mark Carlin, the publisher, editor of BuzzFlash.com. Tim, welcome to the program.
Welcome, guys. I wanted to take a little bit of a challenge. You mentioned that BuzzFlash is independent. I get the emails on a daily basis. I enjoy the great links and everything that are there, but could you justify that to me? Because it seems like it's essentially a Democratic site, period. I mean, I've gotten in the past emails soliciting contributions mentioning the Democratic Party.
Tim, you mean Democratic as opposed to Greens?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I think the Democratic Party would strongly disagree with you. We regularly are critical of the Democratic Party leadership, particularly of Tom Daschle, for sort of being missing in action and opposing the Republicans. And we have even been critical of Nancy Pelosi, who seems to have adopted a Democratic leadership council approach since she became minority leader in the House. We regularly are critical of Joe Lieberman, Dick Gephardt, and so forth. So if we're an outlet for the Democratic Party...
Well, perhaps you're more liberal and progressively oriented, but, you know, you certainly sell... If I wanted to, you know, buy a premium, if I wanted to buy Hillary Clinton's or Sidney Blumenthal's book or any, you know, of the major Democrats and stuff out there, it's certainly there. And I appreciate the criticism, but certainly you've never had anything good to say, for example, about the Greens, have you?
Actually, we have about the Greens. We have been critical of Ralph Nader, and we will continue to be critical because we feel that he hasn't adopted an agenda that is more personal than fulfills his corporate ideals. And we get response from Greens that we put up there. That is our opinion of Ralph Nader.
Absolutely. It's completely wrong because you don't recognize 3 million people who are, you know, actively, you know, who've actively left the Democratic Party and have been electing people. See, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, if you've got a Democratic slant, I think it should be, you know, more, you know, up there. But, you know, personalizing some sort of attack against Ralph when all these other people who have left the party even before Ralph ran, this guy seems to be missing the boat. And, I think when I see someone like Kucinich, you know, losing, where are those progressives going to go when they get a Joe Lieberman on the ticket?
Yeah,
well,
good point, Tim.
If I could just respond to that, Tom, quickly.
Sure.
We have carefully distinguished between Ralph Nader and the Green Party goals and members of the Green Party. Many members of the Green Party take our criticisms of Nader as a criticism of the Green Party, and that I think is unfortunate. We think Nader has met with Grovel Norquist on at least one or two occasions and justified meeting with him, and that's rather frightening. I simply don't take Nader at face value anymore, and that's a personal opinion. We're as critical of him as we are of the Democratic leaders, and yet no one says we're opposed to Democrats. So I think Green Party members have to look at themselves if we're critical of Ralph Nader, does that mean we're critical of the Green Party? We've been very careful to say that's not the case.
Okay, 1-800-TALK, yes, is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Tim, thank you for those comments and that question. It sounds, Mark, like what you're saying is that you're trying to be as independent as possible, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. David in Santa Fe is on the line. He has a question for you. David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, I visit your website at least once a day and enjoy it greatly. And, you know, I wonder what we could... I think the Bush administration's actions are outrageous, but what can we expect from an administration that appoints Negroponte, Reich, Abrams, and what's that other criminal's name? Oh, Poindexter. And I was wondering, do you know how many criminal convictions are in this administration?
They certainly have a rogues list of felons that they've appointed, and it's rather astonishing. On top of that, Casper Weinberger, who was also convicted in Iran contract, but provided with a pardon by Bush the father, wrote a defense of Junior in the New York Times this weekend. So another felon came to his defense. And it is extraordinary. You're absolutely right. And it's extraordinary that both the Democrats and the press have given Bush a free ride on this.
Well, thank you very much. I love your website.
Thank you.
Thanks, David, for that call. I appreciate it. And we're speaking today with Mark Carlin. Mark is the founder, editor, publisher of BuzzFlash.com. BuzzFlash.com, a, quote, liberal website, the progressive or liberal answer to the Drudge Report is how you started out. And now it's becoming a substantial force out there on the Internet, 2.4 million readers a month. And an extraordinary, extraordinary place. Stick around. We're going to be back in just a minute. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. If you'd like to be on the program, call 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. We're here with Mark Carlin. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HD TV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again. Yeah.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations on Sirius Channel 145 and also streaming on the Internet. We're talking with Mark Carlin, founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com, a pro-democracy news and commentary site dedicated to truth, justice, and the American way, with about 2.5 million listeners. Mark, what do you see as the biggest story of this week so far? Today is what, Tuesday? The last couple of days here, what's bubbled up to the top in your field of vision?
It's always hard to choose with the Bush administration. We wrote an editorial, Tom, called The Banality of Lying, and they lie so frequently that it's sort of cheapened the coverage of it. They've lowered the threshold are so low that they just get away with it, and the concentration on the focus and obsession on the 16 words in the State of the Union, I mean, it's just the top of the pyramid. But we think that the biggest story this week that is starting to get some coverage, Paul Krugman mentioned it today, there was a Newsday piece, but for several days the mainstream media ignored it, is an allegation that two quote-unquote senior members of the Bush administration outed a CIA agent, what is known as burning a CIA operative is the better term, who happened to specialize, if one could believe in the horrifically cynical irony of this, in tracking weapons of mass destruction that were being purchased by quote-unquote bad people. And
right,
they,
this being Joe Wilson's wife, right?
Joe Wilson's wife, and this was in a leak to Bob Novak, which he printed in his column, and he confirmed he received the name of the CIA operative, Joe Wilson's wife, who goes under her maiden name, from two senior administration officials. And apparently they did this simply to get back at Wilson and also to intimidate any other CIA operatives or agents from coming forth. And in doing this, they committed treason. They put the interest of the Bush cartel above the interest of the country and endangered our national security on the one issue that Bush still claims they went to a war with Iraq about, which is weapons of mass destruction. So to put it in a nutshell, they destroyed the operational capabilities of a CIA operative who was tracking weapons of mass destruction in order to get back at her husband, who had embarrassed the Bush administration because he revealed that he had told the CIA and the State Department.
Yeah, I've been
well before the State of the Union that the charge about Niger uranium transfers to Iraq was highly doubtful.
Yeah, I've been watching that. I thought that was pretty amazing. Richard in Arizona is on the line. Richard, we've got about a minute left before we go to the break. We can hold you on over the break unless you've got a quick one here. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm a longtime shareholder activist, and I'm just wondering if the recent SEC report on the corporate governance and proxy system has come up on your radar screens.
Which report are you referring to?
They released a report on the 15th of July, which contained something on the order of 600-plus responses by individual shareholders and 20 responses by corporations and law firms for corporations. It appears to me that they are tending to dismiss the 600 citizens and favor the 20 or so corporate CEOs and law firms.
And this is something new?
Yeah, well, it's not, since the SEC has been studying this question since 1940.
Yeah, yeah. Ever since Joe Kennedy was the first head of it. Richard, thanks for that question. We'll give Mark a chance. Mark, I'm interested to know if you are hearing, you know, or seeing a sense of general outrage about what's going on in the business community. We'll be back from this break in about 2.5 minutes, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton. India's highest court yesterday upheld the mass firing of 170,000 government workers. But the court also reprimanded the government of the southern state of Tamil Nadu for the firings and suggested that workers should be reinstated on what it called compassionate grounds. While the ruling is a partial victory, it's a blow for India's trade unions, who hope to overturn the Essential Services Maintenance Act, which banned strikes of public employees. The workers struck early this month after the government unilaterally slashed pension benefits.
36 current and former members of the housekeeping staff at the Central Station Casino in Black Hawk, Colorado, will share in a $1.5 million settlement reached in a discrimination lawsuit. 5 years ago, the casino implemented a requirement that all housekeeping staff speak English while at work, even though it knew many of its housekeepers spoke only Spanish. A supervisor was even fired for refusing to enforce the dictate. The workers sued, and the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission got involved, which precipitated the settlement.
It's not the sweetest victory, but union sugar workers at the San Francisco Bay Area's C&H refinery have a new contract following a two-week strike. Members of Sugar Workers Local 1 voted by a 3-2 margin yesterday to accept the three-year deal, which brings employees of the West Coast's only sugar refinery a 9% pay hike over the life of the contract. On the downside, workers will be asked to fork over an additional $12 every 2 weeks for health coverage.
British workers made more than $40 million worth of calls to phone, sex, and chat lines from the office last year, according to a new study from British Telecom. According to the report, workers at banks and brokerage houses, hotels, and car dealerships were most likely to indulge in phone sex on the job.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking today with Mark.
Whoa.
Where'd it go? Mark Carlin, founder and editor. I lost my paper, and I know your name, Mark. I just, where I was going to go with that, I wasn't. Mark Carlin, founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com, a pro-democracy news and commentary site dedicated to truth, justice, and the American way, as Superman used to say. Mark, what are you seeing anything flying past your radar screen? I've noticed several of these actions in the last couple of days on the right-wing sites about the possibility that Hillary Clinton is going to jump into the race. There was this piece in the Christian Science Monitor yesterday, I think it was, about how Bill did this in 91. He came down, he was checking it out, and Hillary seems to be following the same path. And, you know, there's blood in the water in Washington. What's your sense of this?
I think the right wing is obsessed with Hillary Clinton and still Bill Clinton. As many of your listeners know, Tom Hastert blamed Clinton for the uranium issue on the television talk shows this past Sunday. So, I mean, these are people who need therapy of some sort. They simply can't stop talking or thinking about the Clintons. And I think that the right.
Well, maybe it's because the Clintons are a real threat to them. I mean, you know, if Hillary, the point that the Christian Science Monitor made was that when Hillary first was looking at running for Senate in New York, that she had, you know, one third negative, one third positive, one third undecided, which is pretty much what she has nationally right now, and yet she won the seat easily. And they're suggesting that, you know, with a national campaign, she may well be able to pull off. And in fact, the polls appear to indicate that she would beat Bush right now, whereas none of the Democratic candidates would, according to this Christian Science Monitor article.
Well, if your question is Hillary Clinton at some point thinking that a run for the presidency might be in her future, I think she's all but said yes.
Oh, yeah, 2008.
I think it's unlikely that would happen in 2004 unless it came down to a deadlocked convention, simply because the way that the primaries work is most of the delegates are selected through the primary system at this point in the Democratic Party. And therefore, unless you announce, you really can't get nominated. So you would have to see a really dispersed number of votes for different candidates, and then there would be a brokered convention for Hillary, I think, to be nominated in 2004.
What would be the deadline for announcing if she decided to throw herself into the primaries?
I don't know what the deadline is in each state. That varies from state to state. There is no, to my knowledge, national deadline that the Democratic National Committee has set up. I think that has to do with when you have to file for individual states. So I think that would depend. I don't think that she is going to do that. She's by nature a cautious person. I do think that a lot of this talk is drummed up from the right wing. They actually raise money off of Hillary Clinton. A site like Newsmax, which is a right wing news site on the web, is constantly talking about her running and asking for people to contribute to prevent Hillary from taking over the presidency. She is their number one fundraising tool. Bill's a little too far in the past. Not to blame him, but they can't say he's going to run again, but they can say that about Hillary.
Yeah, it's the old Machiavelli's suggestion that you can only be as strong as your enemy. And so you must have a very strong enemy, or at least one that's perceived to be very strong, in order for the public to see you as a threat or as a powerful leader. And so the right wing is pumping her up. Interesting, interesting idea. What do you think about this impeachment thing of George W. Bush? Do you think it's going to get any traction?
Well, it won't from a practical level, simply because both houses of Congress are controlled by the White House. I mean, you have the man we call a toxic psychotic, the former exterminator Tom DeLay running the House. I mean, Hastert is really just sort of a puppet for him. And then you have Bill Frist running the Senate, really, at the behest of the White House. He was elected, really, to replace Trent Lott to serve the interests of the White House and with the support of the White House. So it'd be pretty hard to see a scenario where two men who owe a debt of loyalty to the White House would allow the impeachment process, and particularly in the House, where Tom DeLay is about as fanatical and ideological zealot as you can find, who would permit. It is just the most unlikely of scenarios that he would permit an impeachment hearing to begin there, which is where it would have to begin. I do think that the talk of impeaching Bush is certainly appropriate from the point of what would be an impeachable offense, and it seems pretty likely at this point that he and Cheney, who should also be impeached, have committed a variety of impeachable offenses.
Right, but then we'd end up with what, Denny Hastert and Colin Powell as president or something like that?
Well, yeah, and not too far down the list is John Ashcroft, so, you know, it may be going from the frying pan into the fire. I think it's more important, however, in terms of the accountability administration, to bring up the facts that they have committed what it seems to be clearly impeachable offenses. And certainly the comparison has often been made on BuzzFlash by readers that no one died from Clinton's lie, whereas from Bush's many lies about going to war with Iraq, we are continuing to see our soldiers die. And Bush lied.
And Iraqis as well.
Excuse me?
And Iraqis,
yes. You know, 10,000 or so civilians, and then, of course, those who will continue to die due to the effects of delayed effects of depleted uranium. And so Bush lied, and our soldiers died, Iraqis died, and both our soldiers and Iraqis are continuing to die.
Yeah. Mark, we're speaking with Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com. Mark, what's your take on the whole neocon thing and the split between the neocons and the traditional conservatives? James Baker's coming out against the war, you know, and the kind of the old Ivy League conservatives, or the old Barry Goldwater, what's his name, the guy who's got Barry Goldwater's seat right now, who ran for president against Bush.
Oh, McCain.
Yeah, John McCain, thank you. The kind of classic traditional conservatives versus these neoconservatives, how's that playing out? What's going on with that? What's the feedback that you're getting from your listeners about the education that you're doing on these issues?
It's hard for anyone to even hear from the traditional conservatives, because the neocons and the radical ideological zealots of the Republican Party are so entrenched that the old conservatives are few and far between. It rarely do you hear from them, and so it's hard to even hear their voice. These are people, of course, the old line conservatives, who are absolutely abhorrent the way that the Bush administration is running up the deficit of the United States. Old line conservatives believed in the surplus that Clinton built up. We've had the largest turnaround in our history, I think $4.1 trillion from a surplus to a deficit, and this has been done under a Republican administration that touts itself as conservative, but really is a spendthrift and is trying to excuse the deficits as nothing significant, and conservatives are just find this totally abhorrent.
Right, but a lot of them are biting their tongues. Zen Pickle in our chat room on ZenPickle.com, he points out that Bob Dole is even now on board calling for an investigation of the Bush administration. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is the number if you have a question for Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash.com. And Jim in North Carolina is on the line. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello, sir. I love your show.
Thank you.
I got a couple points. One, I think there's been a concerted effort to go after the Clintons when Daddy lost to Bill Clinton in the election. I think he never got over it. Millions and millions of people tried to get George Bush not to go into Iraq, but they didn't listen. Nobody listened. Well, now millions of people are wanting to know and asking the question, when is this idiot going to be impeached? I really don't want to impeach him because of what you said earlier. We've got, Cheney and then on down the road.
Yeah.
But why is it that nobody in this administration or in the Senate or Congress hears the American people? Well, I thought we ran this country. They work for us, I think. And why don't they listen to us? And why have they stopped listening to the American people? Thanks.
Good question, Jim. Mark?
The Republican leadership, as we currently see it, doesn't believe in democracy. They simply don't. They believe in their own power. They have done everything they can to dismantle democracy, going back to the impeachment process, which was a frame-up job that was an attempt to undo an election process that resulted in Clinton's election twice. They had the Supreme Court decide the 2000 election. They're trying to recall a governor who was just elected in California now. Tom DeLay in Texas, as most of your listeners know, is trying to, in an unprecedented first-time fashion, try to redistrict after they had already redistricted the congressional seats in Texas so that he can increase the Republican seats there. They don't
and not
believe...
just in Texas.
Yeah, they did that also in several other states. They're trying to do it in Colorado and I believe it was Georgia or one of the Carolinas. But the reality is all they believe in is the preservation of their own power. They toss out a lot of cliches about democracy, but they don't believe it in one iota. I mean, they're more similar to a mob outlook than a political party. Their first goal is the preservation of their own power. It's not democracy. So they have no interest in listening to the people. I believe most Republicans are reasonable people who believe in fairness and decency. They don't know the truth about what's going on with the Bush administration because the mainstream media is not telling them, and certainly the Bush administration is lying to them. And they find it's hard to believe that a president would so openly lie in ways that would end up in our youth, our young people in the military being killed, but that is what's happening. And that's very hard for Americans to accept because they do look up to the office of the presidency.
Yeah, and it's a real tragedy that we have this active destruction of democracy going on. The whole, Grover Norquist saying he doesn't want to destroy government, he just wants to shrink it down to the size where he can drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. I mean, give me a break. Along these same, and Jim, thanks for that call, that was a great comment. Along these same lines, what about the, democracy and the mechanism of democracy? What about the voting machine issue, the theft of the votes and these voting machines that seem to have, at least in Minnesota and Georgia, swung the elections in real significant ways without any audit trails going on. Are you sensing a strong outrage on the part of people there, or is this an issue that has not yet emerged, or is it just starting to, or do you think it won't?
I think this is the sleeper issue of the 2004 election. It's starting to come out a bit more, but I don't think it has hit the mainstream media, and I don't think the Democratic leadership has taken upon themselves to really be concerned about so-called black box electronic voting. But our readers are, and we're seeing more and more articles, more and more commentary, that unless we have a paper trail, these machines can have the program software adjusted so that you end up with basically an unfair and a stolen election. What's more is there have been a couple investigative stories that indicate that the owner of, I think, one or two of the major electronic voting machine firms are Republicans. And
not just Republicans. One of them is actually a member of, is it called Christian Renewal? It's a group that believes that we should replace the Constitution with the Bible.
Yeah, and I believe that Chuck Hagel of Nebraska had an ownership in one of them.
He was president of the company that placed the voting machines in Nebraska, and then he resigned that job to run for office. And it was, the, according to the Washington Post, the upset of the year when he defeated a popular incumbent Democratic governor in back 6 years ago.
Yeah, so it certainly does raise eyebrows and should raise serious questions that will make potentially the election that was stolen from Gore in Florida even more ominous and more pervasive nationally. What's more is that there's a contract that's just been let out that would allow military personnel overseas to vote online, and that is going to be administered by a company that either formerly or still currently is primarily owned by businessmen or financiers from Saudi Arabia.
Right. It's remarkable. We've got about 2 minutes left here, Mark. Mark Carlin, founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com, dedicated to truth, justice, and the American way. Tell us about 9-1-1, the conspiracy theories, the what did Bush know and when did he know it? Is this report that they've been trying, that they've been sitting on, is it going to come out in time for the election? Is this going to harm Bush in the election, or is he going to figure out some way to continue to play the role of the great leader as a result of 9-1-1?
The only way it can harm is again, if the Democrats define the terms of the debate in such a way that it does harm him. Otherwise, the Bush spin will, as president, will tend to overcome any negative information out of the 9-1-1 report. We believe way back when there was enough to hold Bush responsible for not preventing 9-1-1, or at least not vigorously trying to prevent it. In specific, and we brought this up about six times now on Buzz Flash, and it shows just how asleep at the wheel the National Press Corps is. To put it in a nutshell, Condi Rice was sent out after there were rumblings last year about 9-1-1 and what Bush was stolen wasn't, and admitted that he was told in August that Al-Qaeda was planning very terrible hijackings in the United States. But she said this didn't make Bush responsible for trying to prevent 9-1-1 because what happened at 9-1-1 wasn't a hijacking. But that was a lie, as we all know, because they were hijackings. They were just hijackings that ended up being flown into buildings. And if he had worked to prevent hijackings, that is Bush, then 9-1-1 might not have happened. And the press just let this go by as though this explained
it. But BuzzFlash didn't. BuzzFlash nailed it. BuzzFlash.com. We've been talking with Mark Carlin, the founder and editor of BuzzFlash.com, a pro-democracy news and commentary site dedicated to truth, justice, and the American way. Mark, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks, Tom. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, and so are you. Keep it up. You're with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Powell, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
The Mike Molloy Show.
Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer. At the briefing today,
the job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
Alrighty, then.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Molloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Molloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Molloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Dave Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Last 3 minutes or so of the show, we've got two calls here. We'll try and take them quickly. Jim in St. Louis, you have a comment about Mark or for Mark. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm probably one of the couple million people that like his site a lot.
Yeah, it's great. I'm sorry Mark had to go. He had another radio show that he was going to be interviewed on at 3, so he wanted to bail out.
Another thing was with the electronic voting. I don't know how much it pertains to the systems we have, but Australia uses an open source software that's published on the Internet.
Right, and there's a big movement for that, demanding open source software. Good point. Thank you very much, Jim. I appreciate it. Robert in Washington, D.C., welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. We're in the last minute or two here. What's up?
Yes, sir. I also agree that open source code is a real key to freedom and democracy, but I also wanted to say basically that when you realize, and just stick to the public domain information, that a lot of the Bush administration is really just a continuation of the same criminality from the Iran-Contra and really back to the Nixon administration, you know, what they have done and what they are continuing to do is so profound and affects every level of our society, legal, social, economic, go on down the line, that I believe that impeachment is the only thing that is going to begin the sort of sea change that we need in order to literally to save this nation.
Well, but, you know, we thought that that would happen with Nixon. I mean, and the beast returned. Why not have a groundswell of electoral response in 2004? I mean, why not use this issue to just wake up so many people and get them so angry that it can be done at the ballot box?
Yeah,
if you like Mark said, if you impeach Bush and Cheney, you're going to get Hastert and what's his name running the country.
I think that if you were to have an impeachment, you would not only have the groundswell, but on every level, it would be far stronger.
Yeah, well, it could be. My concern with impeachment is that it will so polarize and politicize the issue that a lot of people, I mean, you know, Hannity and Fox and all these guys, they're already saying, this is just Democrats trying to make hay when the sun shines, as they're making politics out of the whole. And they're trying to spin the whole thing like it's about politics. And it's really not. As you point out, Robert, it's about people telling the truth about lies and criminality within our own government. Uncommon Sense from the... And thanks for the call, Robert. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Tune back in tomorrow. Same time, same place.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio.